Van Damme and Minnie Pearl!
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 123. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Ethan is off in New York trying to follow the scenes of New York, I Love You. He's going to all the locations.
Good luck, buddy. It's going to take a while. But remember, you can only be there for 15 seconds because that's how long each of the vignettes were. So.
Wow, well played.
I hope he goes to the library where they shot Ghostbusters, because I got to say, being up there with the lions up front, that is a cool, cool thing. I did that a few summers ago. It's like, wow, this is where my childhood started. So I hope he goes there.
Did you see the Improv Everywhere gag that they did? They actually went into the library and had someone dressed in a really crappy Slimer outfit, and they had like a Be Kind Rewind kind of Ghostbusters outfits.
Wow.
And just ran around chasing
Slimer. Did they get tossed out of the place?
No, everyone was laughing. It's pretty funny. I'm pretty sure it was Improv Everywhere.
Very nice.
Yes. So this is probably going to be a short episode, but that's okay. The main topic, I think we're going to make Scott Pilgrim this week since we have to talk about that. Oh, my goodness.
Talk about Scott Pilgrim versus the world.
Indeed. But in the meantime, what have you watched this week, sir?
I finally got around to seeing Rover Dangerfield. You ever seen this?
No.
This is the movie that Rodney Dangerfield did. He wrote it. He was the executive producer. It's an animated film where he is Rover Dangerfield, this dog, this talking dog, who gets in a lot of trouble in Vegas, so he has to relocate to a farm. So it's all these hijinks about him being like, you know, this dog on a farm. Oh, my God, what am I doing here? You know. And, I mean, it looks just like him, too. The dog has his pop-out eyes and his tie. And, of course, there's a line about not getting any respect.
Of course, that's a given if it's Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, it's interesting. It doesn't completely work, but I like it. It reminds me kind of like one of those subpar Don Bluth movies, like a Troll in Central Park or something. The animation is quite good, and there are a number of scenes where the animation is really beautiful. But like on one hand, the comedy works. It is funny to hear like, you know, Dangerfield doing dog jokes, but then he breaks out into song. And there's this one song.
He
wrote all the songs too. Yeah, and this is one song.
And he sings them?
He does. This one song where he sings about. Where he draws the line and he won't pee on a Christmas tree. That's one of the songs. I'm not kidding. it's that kind of a movie. It's really odd.
There you go. Wow.
Yeah, like not a bad movie, but it didn't quite live up to my curiosity. So saw that. I saw a film that I really liked, even though it's got some real problems, but it's worth seeing for the cast, especially if you're fans of the actors. The film came out in 1995, called Jeffrey. It was based on an off-Broadway play, basically very topical, about this guy, gay guy, decides that with the AIDS crisis, he's not going to date anybody. He's going to be completely celibate until he meets the love of his life, and the love of his life has AIDS. So it's, you know, a very topical story, but it's a comedy. And Steven Weber has the lead role from Wings. And
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like, here's why you got to see this movie. Playing Steven Weber's best friend, a very flamboyant fabric guy, Patrick Stewart. And Patrick Stewart is wonderful in this movie. Like, I can't even tell you. Like, I mean, he is so funny and so touching in this film. He's so good. Patrick Stewart's in it. Sigourney Weaver has a knockout cameo as this health guru who is basically kind of like the Dr. Laura of her day.
Wow.
Yeah, the movie, like, it's
does she drop the N-bomb?
Thankfully.
Sorry,
no.
It was there.
It was. No, thankfully, nothing like that. Jeffrey's really hit and miss, and some of it, you could really tell it's based on an off-Broadway play and that it's a really low-budget movie, but again, like, Patrick Stewart and Sigourney Weaver, and for that matter, Steven Weber, are so good that it really is worth seeing for the acting.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I guess the last one I'll throw out, I did get to see Eyes Without a Face. This is a French movie from 1959. It came out the year before Psycho, and it's arguably as shocking. It's kind of this mad scientist story. This little girl gets into an accident. Her face is terribly deformed. She has parents, the father of which, who is a surgeon, and he basically kidnaps girls, removes their faces, and puts it on to his daughter to heal her.
Wow.
It's available on Criterion. It's that kind of a movie. It's on one hand, it is shocking, and I was shocked. Even some of the makeup effects, I knew how they did it. It was still shocking to watch. But it's kind of like this mixture of like a fantasy, a fable, and a horror tale. I mean, today it would be like really graphic and gross, but there's something almost whimsical about it. I really liked it.
Interesting. What's it called again?
Eyes Without a Face.
Okay, I'll add it to the queue.
Yeah, it's on. That's where I saw it.
And Billy, is it on Watch Instantly? Or?
Yep.
Ooh, okay.
And Billy Idol, you know, his song is based after this. I mean, the song, the song that he wrote was about drug addiction, but I know he apparently saw the film and that was what inspired him to write the song. So
wow, very cool.
Yeah, that's basically it, other than the theatrical releases, which we'll get to.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I watched a few things. I finally got around to watching Stagecoach. It's on Criterion, first yeah. John Wayne, John Ford collaboration. That's a really interesting film. It definitely shows off the bravado of John Wayne as the Western action hero, and the fact that they shot it on location really added a lot to the film. It looks gorgeous. I watched it on Blu-ray from the Barnes & Noble half-off sale. And it's fun, but it's very straightforward in its treatment of women from different walks of life, I'll say.
Okay.
One is a prostitute who's pretty much treated like crap. And John Wayne's like, well, you're going to give water to this lady. Why don't you give it to this lady, too? Because, you know, she's a lady. And he essentially bullies everyone into treating this the hooker with the heart of gold, if you will, as a real person.
Sure.
It was really interesting to have something that old. And, again, for a film that old, Criterion did a top-notch job doing the restoration. It looks great.
Cool.
Lots of fun. What else did I watch? I got around to finally watching. I'm one movie away. I have to watch Four Rooms still, but I watched Jackie Brown, so I'm one movie away from completing the filmography of Quentin Tarantino. That was a really interesting movie because it kind of has a blaxploitation feel to it in some ways, but it's more of a heist movie.
Yeah.
As opposed to being blaxploitation, because it just didn't have those exploitive parts so much. It had the funk soundtrack. It had a great soundtrack. Oh, my gosh. Pam Grier is the woman in this movie. Sam Jackson plays a very different role from other stuff that I think he plays. He's kind of a wannabe, but he's not. And it's just fascinating watching his character going through everything, watching Pam Grier. Michael Keaton as the DEA agent. I thought he was pretty fascinating to watch because you never knew what was going on in his mind.
Right.
But it was just so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah,
I love De Niro.
De Niro's great, and so is Bridget Fonda. They got that great scene. But, yeah. But yeah, I love Robert Forster. Love Robert Forster. I mean,
was Bill Bosman's friend?
Yeah, he got the Oscar nomination for the movie. And yeah, like
he deserved it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody saw it, but yeah, his performance is the one that really stayed with me.
Yeah, it was really good. You know, it's probably just about my least favorite Tarantino film.
Well, you haven't seen Four Rooms yet.
Okay.
That'll change.
And I didn't like Reservoir Dogs as much.
Okay.
But that's not saying that it's a bad movie by a long shot, because I really like a lot of Tarantino's films.
Did you think Jackie Brown was like too long, or do you agree with that? It's a little long-winded or self-indulgent?
No more than the rest of his films, I don't think, honestly. Okay. I mean, that's just kind of it's a Tarantino film. You pretty much should know that going into it.
Yeah, but it's 2 hours.
I guess you could have cut about 15 minutes probably pretty easily.
Yeah, it's almost 3 hours. I mean, I think it's his longest film.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could have cut 15 minutes or so, but I was fine with the length personally.
Okay, just curious. I haven't seen it in years, but that's always the argument I hear. It's too long.
But perhaps.
But yeah, it's a good film, though.
It really is. I mean, there's not a lot of wasted time on screen. That's the thing. I guess, you know, well, Tarantino's verbose in all of his films, though, so you can't really say, well, it's too talky. It's Tarantino. Come on, people.
Exactly.
Yep. It's like saying a Kevin Smith movie is too talky. Really? Right.
Well, that's look who wrote it. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, and I think that's about it outside of, that crappy release that came out this week.
Mm.
Yeah. Shall we go ahead and get to those?
Yeah, go ahead and call them off. What came out?
I'm doing it this week.
You got it. Yeah, you got it this week.
All right. This week, coming out, that came out in theaters. Lottery Ticket. I don't even remember what the heck this is.
That's Bow Wow, Ice Cube, and Charlie Murphy in the same movie.
Well, Charlie Murphy might be... No, I'm good. There's a reason I haven't heard about this thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. This is another one. Like, there's a few movies on the list that were supposed to come out like months ago. So this is one of those that's been kind of pushed around.
Gotcha.
So what else we got?
The sequel nobody asked for, Nanny McPhee Returns, answering all the questions that no one had from the first film. Vampires Suck, the latest and greatest atrocity from Jason Seltzer and Aaron Freiberg. Aaron Seltzer and Jason Freiberg. Who cares?
Who cares?
They suck.
They do.
The funniest parts, I will admit, I chuckled during the It's Raining Men with the Werewolves scene in the trailer. But beyond that, this is crap. Don't give them money.
No.
This is the one time I will fully endorse piracy on our show. Download the freaking work print that's been out for 3 months. Don't give these guys money.
No.
Then we have got, the Switch. Yeah, we'll get there
You've
in a minute.
You've seen this, Dave.
We'll get there. And then what everyone is flipping for, Drew McWeeny over at HitFix.com went as far as to say it's the best use of 3D in a film yet, Piranha 3D. And then limited release, the Tillman story about Pat Tillman.
I've heard that's very good, Tillman story. There was all that controversy recently about Josh Brolin, the narrator, saying that this movie needs to be PG-13 so more people can see it. It being slapped with an R rating wasn't fair, despite the fact that apparently there's a lot of profanity in it, but...
Yeah.
Oh well.
Interesting. Okay. Should I take the baseball bat out first so you can have fun later?
You go ahead. Yeah, let's start off with the Switch.
Oh, the Switch.
The Switch. This is originally called the Baster. Isn't that disgusting? I think it's because
there's one turkey baster joke in the entire freaking movie.
Well, I think they might have changed it simply because there were enough dumb people who would look at the title and go, the baster, huh? You know. So anyway, the Switch.
Them folk didn't quite graduate from junior high. Okay. Wow, the Switch is about crap. That's what it's about. That's what it is. Jennifer Aniston. Is a 30-something, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I want to have a baby, blah, blah. Jason Bateman's her best friend who fell in love with her, never had the guts to tell her, and through a wacky series of events, ends up swapping his ingredients, as the film calls it, with the original donor, Patrick Wilson. And 7 years later, Jennifer, you know, right as she gets preggers, she moves away. 7 years later, she moves back, and oh, look, insanity's wackiness will ensue. You know, there's one thing that keeps this movie pretty much from being on the level of When in Rome, frankly. It's bad. It's a bad movie. Shoot. Why am I spacing on her name? She was in the main bad guy in Whip It.
Juliette Lewis.
Yes.
Wonderful Juliette Lewis.
Completely wasted in this movie.
Oh, yeah?
I wanted her to die.
Oh.
She needed to get socked in the jaw really hard. Her character did. Jennifer Aniston is a whining, needy little...
So she's playing herself.
I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to go based off the characters.
Okay.
Patrick Wilson's kind of a sleazeball, but he's a decent enough guy. There's really one reason to see this film. Two, I guess. Jason Bateman does the best he can with this material. They got the cute kid, and they have a fun chemistry and whatever. But he does the best. He makes it as entertaining as he possibly can. But he and Jeff Goldblum, they need to be in a buddy movie together because they played off each other so well. And Jeff Goldblum's just awesome. I don't know that it's worth enough to actually go out to the theater and see this movie, but if you hit a dollar red box or something like that, you won't want to completely kill yourself. You know, When in Rome is on my worst of all time list.
All time.
But this is not, outside of that, this movie is completely forgettable and completely useless. Hmm. So, yeah.
Wow.
I never need to see this movie ever again.
I'm sure people who are watching Enthused right now feel that way.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they feel, hey, I saw it 4 days ago and still feel that way. So, yeah. Yeah. But you saw Piranha 3D.
Piranha 3D is fun. It's a lot of fun. I would compare it to the remake of My Bloody Valentine that came out last year. It's an excellent, excellent use of 3D for a pretty decent movie. What works is the film has a real good sense of humor about itself, but that also undercuts that it's supposed to be a horror film. It's really not very horrifying, despite the fact that there's tons of blood and gore, but the whole thing, it works best as a comedy above all else. It wastes some fine actors, specifically Richard Dreyfuss, who literally has nothing to do, literally nothing to do in this movie. Elizabeth Shue looks visibly embarrassed to be there, and she should be. And Ving Rhames, poor guy. He has less to do in this movie than he did in any of the Mission Impossible films. He plays the sheriff with a gun, and he's got one cool scene, but otherwise it's completely wasted. You forget he's even in the movie. He has no introduction. All of a sudden, there he is, Ving Rhames. And the rest of the cast is basically unknown. The actor who walks away with the movie just because he gives a nothing role so much is Jerry O'Connell.
Okay, I heard Christopher Lloyd was really funny in it, too.
You know, he is. It's one scene, and what's funny about that is he doesn't make any allusions. He's playing Doc Brown.
Okay, I was just going
to
ask.
Yeah, he's not even trying to do something different. He's playing Doc Brown.
They're probably okay, do Doc Brown. It will be perfect, trust me.
And it's fun because they think, okay, he and Elizabeth Shue did that movie together. That's fun to watch. But no, otherwise, Lloyd is fun, but he's not. I mean, it looks like they woke him up, took him to the set, and just say this crap about the fish, and that's his role. But no, Jerry O'Connell is a lot of fun because, as we'll talk about in the news, he's obviously playing Joe Francis, the founder of Girls Gone Wild, so I've heard, and his performance is go for broke lunacy. It's a lot of fun, and his closing line is one of the funniest I've heard all year.
Okay, so worth seeing in the theater with the 3D.
Worth seeing in the theater with the 3D with an 8 o'clock crowd. Don't see it in a matinee like I did, which is stupid. See it with as many obnoxious, drunken college kids as you possibly can. Because it's that kind of movie. It is such an outrageous movie, and I'm not going to give any of it away because it is really, really outrageous. I mean, the stuff this movie does. I mean, it's not just simply nudity in 3D. I mean, it goes so beyond that. I mean, And again, I would feel comfortable talking about it like months later after more people have seen it, because right now it's a little too fresh. But there are some stuff in this like, oh, wow, I never would have thought to put that in a 3D movie.
All right, then.
But no, I got to say the 3D is excellent. It really it when the lights are dark and you can barely see what's swimming around you and you hear the chattering of the fish teeth, and yeah, it's freaky. It's definitely freaky. There is one shot, I think they even showed it in the trailer, where you see like this army of fish all of a sudden swim at you. And 3D, that's I gotta admit, I didn't duck completely under my seat, but I was at least halfway there. I jumped a few times, but most of all, it's just it really does give a depth of field. It's really good, sharp 3D. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, Clash of the Titans added on later.
Well, that's good.
So this is a really good 3D movie. Yeah. So if you see it, I'll see in 3D as a movie. It's better than The Final Destination. It's a better movie than that. I don't think it's quite as good as My Bloody Valentine, but but yeah, but again, what works is that it is a comedy overall, and I think that really helps it, because as a horror movie, it's really not much. And Alexandra Aja, who directed it, I think
High Tension, the guy who did High Tension of all things.
Yeah, and I would say this is a step down for him, but the movie is fun. It is fun. I would definitely see it again, just because again, the 3D is so good. This is what my parents wanted when they went and saw Jaws 3D all those years ago. This is the movie that could have been if the 3D was any good. So.
Cool. Did you see the Oscar For Your Consideration video on Funny or Die?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's freaking hilarious. Yeah, like most of the cast isn't on it. I don't think Elizabeth Shue or Christopher Lloyd or Ving Rhames show up. Everyone else does, though, and they are just going for broke trying to sell this thing as an Oscar contender. It's hilarious.
Great.
Well worth watching.
Okay.
I guess we'll move on to DVDs.
Okay.
There's really not a whole heck of a lot. This week and next week are pretty bare as far as releases, as far as I'm concerned.
In theaters and on DVD,
Yep. On DVD and Blu-ray, we have got Cummings' Survival of the Dead, the latest George Romero film.
You saw this and
not
you didn't
a fan.
Like it.
Okay. It's a very, you know, people are pretty split on it. People either love it or hate it, and I'm so definitely in that hate it column.
You just hated it.
I just did not like any of it at all whatsoever.
So it's not even
Hatfields and McCoys.
It's not even as good as Diary of the Dead or Land of the Dead.
No. And I don't like Land of the Dead, but that was a masterpiece compared to this piece.
Why is it such a piece?
It's essentially, remember the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes cartoons where you had like the cartoon version of the Hatfield and McCoys?
Yeah.
Picture them Scottish. There's your movie, throw in zombies and an army squad.
Weird.
The army squad from Diary of the Dead, I believe.
Okay.
There's your movie.
So it's a direct sequel to Diary of the Dead?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was not a fan.
Oh, well.
Then we've also got a project. You can read a lot of it over Christopher over at johnja.net has written a lot about Night of the Living Dead Reanimated. Sounds really cool. I'll probably throw it in the Netflix queue to catch it. And then finally, we've got Season 6 as well as the complete series of Lost. Oh, it doesn't work. Dang it. I lost the file. Oh, well, I was going to use the GRD gag, but that's okay. I don't care. I don't know. I'll watch Lost at some point, I guess. I just don't need to watch something that episodic right now.
I gave up very quickly for Lost. And, I wanted it to end. I didn't want it to be like Gilligan's Island, where they're on that island for like season after season. Like, finish the show.
Remember the episode where they almost got off the island? Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. All right. So, yeah, and there's our releases for this week. That's really it.
That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just so pathetic.
It's late August. I mean, a year ago at this time, we had The Inglourious Basterds in theaters. We're just not that lucky this year. You know,
no.
We've had Inception.
Well, we had Piranha 3D. There you go.
And I don't know.
It's better than the Switch, I promise.
Hey, okay, there you go. But no, it's like I think we're done. Summer's over. We're done with like the great summer movies to look forward to, obviously.
Yeah. I don't know. All right, shall we move on to some news?
Yes.
Let's go ahead and go to the Piranha 3D thing you were talking about.
Yeah. and I got to say, I'll be completely honest. This is the reason I ran out to see the movie, because I was going to wait to see it in the theater. But yesterday morning, the movie just opened. Sorry, we're recording this Saturday. Yesterday was Friday. Friday, the movie opens. I wake up in the morning and just perusing over the news and top story, Joe Francis, the founder of Girls Gone Wild, is suing Piranha 3D. He's suing the filmmakers. He apparently is after Jerry O'Connell. He's basically going after all this issue of rights, saying that the movie violates what you can do with satire, because apparently Jerry O'Connell has said numerous times that his character, even though it has a different name, his character is clearly a parody of Joe Francis. In the movie, Jerry O'Connell works for a show called Wild Wild Girls. So they're not really trying to hide it. And in the movie... In the movie, it looks exactly like what you expect from Girls Gone Wild. I mean, you see Joe Francis, you know, paying girls on the spot with money, you know, to take off their tops and, you know, to do jello shots off each other. I mean, the whole thing. And in addition to that, he's also a cocaine user. You see him like using cocaine madly. The article gives it away. I'm not going to give it away, but the article does give away what happens to his character. And I'm not going to give it away, but Francis was furious as to the outcome of his character. So he is hopping mad because he feels that this film is a mockery of him. And the thing that really gives his case some merit, unfortunately, is Jerry O'Connell, because O'Connell in numerous interviews said, "I'm playing Joe Francis." And then he says, "I mean, a fictionalized version of Joe Francis, ha ha ha." So O'Connell is one of the reasons that this came to Joe Francis's attention. So unfortunately, now Francis has a case because O'Connell himself has even admitted on the record that, yes, they're making fun of him. So
Because that's going to hurt his business just so much.
I know, it's so stupid.
How many people know who the hee-haw Joe Francis is in the first place?
I'm proud to say that it wasn't until the article that I like, oh, the Girls Gone Wild guy. But
okay.
So this may end up in a court. You know, it might get thrown out, which would be great. But no, there is a chance that this could get pushed through. Apparently, Francis has his lawyers on it, and he's hopping mad. And he thinks he has a case, and so does his attorney. So,
all right then.
Joe Francis versus Piranha 3D.
Yeah, Piranha 3D. That's what you want to go after.
Trial of the century.
Wow. All right, what else you got, sir?
The trailer for the new Wes Craven movie finally hit. My Life to Take.
My Soul to Keep.
I'm sorry, I wrote My Life to Take.
Wow.
Is that an actual movie? No. My Soul to Take. My Soul to Take. This is the new Wes Craven movie in 3D. This movie was shot about 2 years ago. I've been waiting for this thing, but...
It looks pretty interesting.
I got to say, I was very happy with the trailer. I don't know.
I mean, they laid out the entire storyline for you. They just didn't let you off the hook as to what's going to end up happening.
Yeah, and I think, like, on one hand, it doesn't look knock your socks off scary, but I mean, it looks scary enough. It looks like a fun Halloween movie to see. Yeah, I think I'm there.
Cool. I forgot to mention, I finally saw the Devil trailer.
Oh, the Shyamalan trailer.
Yeah, twice in the theater. And what's funny is, you're right, it is a good trailer. Until Shyamalan's name shows up, and then everyone starts groaning or laughing.
Right.
That's hilarious.
It's amazing. Because otherwise, it's a great Twilight Zone setup for that story. Yeah, then from the mind of Night Shyamalan, like, oh, don't do that.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, this is the first in the Night Chronicles. So,
maybe the last. We'll see how this one does.
Yeah, if Devil doesn't do so well, the second one might go straight to DVD. But the second one sounded good. I think it was called 12 Chairs or 12 Spirits. It's like like an Agatha Christie supernatural kind of thing. Like, again, it sounds like an episode of The Twilight Zone. So I love that he's trying to do this kind of, you know, this episodic vignette thing. But
it's still him.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate like when this happens, because the studio obviously thought that, well, you know, The Last Airbender is going to be a huge hit, so we'll just release this a few months after The Last Airbender.
Oops.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, what other news did you have? Did you have
anything else? What else do we got? Oh, well, we'll definitely both talk about this, the Black Swan trailer.
Oh, my goodness.
Darren Aronofsky
trailer. I was having such a bad day when this released, and it made everything better. I mean, it's a messed up trailer. Don't get me wrong, but it's just so I'm there.
Well, this is, I mean, I think you could agree with this. This is what we wanted from this movie. I mean,
absolutely.
They described the film, and I thought, okay, it sounds like frickin' Showgirls. Okay, it sounds like these two competitive dancers, one's trying to, like, it sounds like frickin' Showgirls. I don't want this to happen to Darren Aronofsky. And then you see this trailer, and like, they don't shy away from the fact that it is a psychological thriller, that it is erotic, that it truly shows the beauty and the complexity of the world of ballet. I mean, this looks like a pretty...
This looks like a Cronenberg film.
Very layered, very disturbing film, which is exactly what I want from Aronofsky.
I'm so hoping. If anyone from the Denver Film Fest is here listening to this, please get this movie. I would kill to see it.
I would be surprised if it wasn't on the lineup, to tell you the truth. But, you never know.
I can't wait to see that movie. That looks just so... out there.
I was very pleased, and it's kind of as a add-on to this comment, I gotta say, the movie trailer that I did see that looked exactly like Showgirls, have you seen the one for Burlesque?
No.
It looks exactly like Showgirls. This is the one where
Christina Aguilera,
she's a waitress, and she's like looking at the girls in the burlesque show going, wow, I want that to be me, and Cher is her mentor, and who is the competition? It's a good
actress.
I saw
it on the screening list.
Kristen Bell. Your favorite from When in Rome. Man. She's like the competition. Yeah, poor Veronica Mars. What happened, man?
Because you got You Again, and I'm like, they showed the trailer in front of the Switch, which, granted, You Again looks way better than the Switch. But still, I'm like, oh, man, if you burn me again, I'm not going to be happy. And it looks like we might be going for a third, because I didn't even see her name in the cast list for that one. But I saw that that's coming up on the screening. I'm like, oh.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I don't know. Kristen Bell, you know, she was wonderful in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. But
and even in Heroes as well as Veronica Mars. And it just, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Hope she can survive this bad patch of movies, thing.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Have you got anything else?
I guess that's it.
Okay. The last thing I've got is apparently Bryan Singer called Harry Knowles to talk about X-Men First Class.
That's always kind of cool when it is. You get a phone call from Bryan Singer.
It is. It is. It's cool that they have that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
But apparently they're saying some very interesting things, like it's going to be set in the 60s. The thing that honestly scares me is they're like, we're going to do the throwback costumes, like the comic costumes from back then.
Oh, wow. With the yellow and...
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know how I feel about that. I also don't know how I feel about January Jones playing Emma Frost. She, you know, Mrs.
Yeah, I know
Betty
January
Draper
Jones.
from Mad Men, for those who don't know.
I know her from American Wedding, but yeah, I know Jeremy okay. Jones. Yeah, they're beautiful
I don't know
actors.
If she can pull off the stone cold biatch that she needs to. I don't know. But her and Michael Fassbender, Michael Fassbender's playing Magneto. Kevin Bacon's is going to be playing opposite of January Jones in the Hellfire Club. I don't know what to think. Honestly, I got burned so bad by the last two X-Men movies, it's hard for me to work up any kind of excitement at all whatsoever.
I don't mind so much the switch in suits as much as I mind the switches in director. Matthew Vaughn is very good, but call me crazy. I'd like to see Bryan Singer come back. You know, yeah. I would like to see him do one more of these films. I really would.
And they're saying that this is not going to be a Singer X-Men movie. This is them restarting the whole thing. So we'll see. I mean, with him being a producer and knowing a lot of the story and being involved, I don't know. We'll see.
The producer thing worries me, though, because you remember how Tim Burton was the producer on the third Batman movie, and it doesn't look anything like a Tim Burton movie at all? Like, why the heck is his name on that movie?
It was more of a payoff, I think, than anything else.
I guess so, yeah. To show up on the set, go, good job, and walk away. Like, yeah.
I doubt he even did that.
I'd be surprised if he did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, wow. Interesting times. Okay.
Well, like, between this and the Spider-Man redo, I'm just not excited. And I don't know what's worse.
Well, you heard Mary Jane is not going to be in the Spider-Man reboot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're saying either the romantic interest is either going to be, what's her name who died in the third one? Crud. His first girlfriend ever, played by Howard.
By Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one with the cute one with the
red
hair.
Yeah, yeah. Or Black Cat.
I'm confused. Isn't this still a high school prequel?
Yeah. Gwen Stacy. That's what.
Gwen
Stacy. I went there finally.
There you go.
Well, Gwen Stacy gets killed in the comics. Spoiler. Sorry. Oh well. So that could be really interesting. But I don't know. Again, I don't know if I'm going to see it. So I don't know how much I really care.
I'm still confused because doesn't like
Black Cat shows up later.
But well, wait a second though. He's in high school. He goes on a field trip. He gets bitten by the spider. This is going to be before that, or is this going to be around
that
time?
This is a complete reboot.
Okay, so we're starting from scratch. This is another origin story.
Yes, yeah, because we need another origin story for Spider-Man. Just like we need another Superman origin story or a Batman origin story. Everyone knows.
But they're not doing the Green Goblin.
I don't know what they're doing. I really don't care that much.
Joshua Jackson is the Green Goblin.
Oh, wow. All right, then. There you go. On that pleasant
note. I hate these reboots. Yeah. I hate them.
It's a 10-year-old franchise. Seriously?
Go in a different direction. I mean, I know like I'm one of the few people who like Superman Returns, but like just take what's already been established and just go with it. Don't keep rebooting. I mean, like the Incredible Hulk, I mean, that's a tragedy. Like that last movie, it's like, just kidding. You know, just like it didn't even happen, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. All right, before we get the nerd rage in full effect, let's go ahead and take a break and then we'll be right back.
In 2005, the crack unit of bloggers were banned by a web administrator for spam they didn't send. These men promptly created their own website in the cyberspace underground. Today, still wanting a place to discuss their fandom, they survive as bloggers of sci-fi. If you have a favorite show or movie, if no one else can understand you, and if you can type J-O-N-J-A on your keyboard, maybe you can find Jonja.net. At Jonja.net, you can find discussions and reviews in sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and everything in between, as well as exclusive interviews with some of your favorite celebrities and filmmakers. Join our forums now and subscribe to the Jonja.net podcast. Everything is free, and everything is fun. We'll see you online at Jonja.net.
And we're back to discuss Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Very nice spot, by the way, from JohnJiv.net. That was the first time we'd heard it.
It's a fun one.
You know, I let me throw this out before we begin, because we're going to be talking about a summer movie flop during, coincidentally, during this topic. But
that's so sad.
I can't believe that the A-Team bombed. I mean, we'll get to Scott Pilgrim in a second, but I still can't believe that. I know you didn't like it as much as I did.
Oh, no, I loved it.
But I mean, yeah, I had a blast with it. Yes, it was so stupid, but like, it was exactly what it needed to be. It was exactly the summer movie I wanted it to be. I don't get it. I don't get it how people could turn their back on that movie. I thought it was so much fun.
It was. It so was. In some ways, I think it was better than Expendables.
I've been thinking about that. I'm not sure. I think it's smarter than the Expendables.
Oh, absolutely.
Smarter. I think the Expendables might have it over the action, just because so much of the action in A-Team was CGI.
And you had Jason Statham, who is
Jason
like the
Statham
human CGI.
On the edge of a plane, like firing, blowing up a whole bridge. I mean, that scene was just so freaking amazing.
If Statham wasn't in it, I'd give it to the A-Team easily.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you that. Statham, for me, Statham and Rourke were like the kings of that movie.
Yeah. And I won't talk smack about anyone else. Some people looked like they were cross-dressing. They're like drag queens on vacation for some reason.
That's mean. No, I got to say, the one thing that did bother me, though, was Stallone's eyebrows.
Yeah.
They look kind of Michael Jackson-esque.
And his Zoolander-like overly, expression for half the movie.
Overly tweaked. Yeah, I don't know. Because I love Stallone, too. But
props have to be given to him because he didn't make himself the focal point of the film.
Yeah, it really was an ensemble movie. He really was kind of like the master of ceremonies. Like, look who we have in the movie, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, everyone got a chance to shine, even the bad guys.
They did. I think Jackie Chan would have been a more natural fit for the Jet Li part, let's face it, because Jet Li is a much tougher guy, whereas Jackie Chan could do that, like, you know, I think humility a little more.
But that was what I think made Jet Li so much fun, was because he was doing something against type.
He was, yeah. He was really doing something different. He was very good. I think the only person in the movie who, like, really kind of came up short just because it was a role that required some acting was Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, my gosh.
Interesting character. Interesting character. But
bad actor.
Yeah, his acting just...
That was like Judge Dredd levels of acting.
Yeah, it was pretty poor. And I mean, when Jet Li can like act circles around you, that's, you know,
that's not a good sign.
No.
But that's not what we're talking about. Although we had to talk about it because it did come out the same week.
It opened the same week.
Yeah,
Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It's pretty bizarre. I hate, like, I've been doing a lot of research about how films have been playing over the years, and I really just don't like that. In the 70s and 80s, movies used to be out in theaters for weeks and weeks and weeks before it was established, if they're doing well or not, you know, and movies had a chance to get out there and just really hang in there and develop word of mouth. And, you know, you had movies like Back to the Future or Beverly Hills Cop that played for, like, months and months and months, you know, and they weren't on video or, you know, video cassette for, like, you know, years.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have it where after one weekend, you know, if it didn't open well, it is a flop. This movie is a stinker. It's going to be gone, you know. And that's what happened to Scott Pilgrim.
I just don't get it.
That's a shame. And what's really weird to me, Dave, is that, like, the week before this thing opened, this was one of the most critically acclaimed movies of the summer.
Yeah.
This was one of the hottest movies coming out of Comic-Con, and in one weekend it became Snakes on a Plane.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I mean, the movie had me sold from this moment on. It's all it needed. Come on. As soon as this came on, I had this giant grin on my face. Steph looks over at me, she's like, you're already in love with this movie, aren't you? Like, yes. Yes, I am. Because when you have enough of a sense of humor to do this with the Universal logo... It's just brilliant. I love that touch. So, yeah. Like, it's sad. I went out and bought that track.
It's, you know, it's a really good soundtrack in general. I really like the
soundtrack.
Oh, my
goodness. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like the songs from the Sex Bob-ombs.
So, do you think that this was a matter of... do we want to get to what happened, or do we want to talk about the film first?
I want to talk about what happened first, because we'll get to the film. But
do you think it was the marketing?
Yes. The poster sucked. Let's be honest. An epic of... epicness. That was the tagline.
Yeah.
And then you have Michael Cera not even looking directly at the, you know, he's like playing his guitar. That's a nice teaser poster.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't tell you anything. I mean, it looked like a rock movie. I mean, what is this film? And the trailer, you know, I've told you this, like, I didn't want to see the movie because I thought the trailer made it look like Speed Racer. I thought it looked obnoxious.
It's been compared a lot to it, but like if Speed Racer was good.
Yeah,
a lot of people.
Yeah, but like, I mean, for me, like, the trailer made it look like this is going to be just like Speed Racer, flashy and really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that's true.
You know, on one hand, this is a tough movie to advertise, but on the other hand, like, I think if you just establish, like, you know, like even Julia was saying as we were leaving the theater, like, maybe if you had the guys say, in a world where manga and anime and video games and comic books all live side by side, and then you could cut to, like, you know, one of those shots of Michael Cera walking around with a sound effects or you know, happening around him, like just like establish that this is a completely different universe that we've seen.
It totally is.
Just completely play off that instead of like show these scenes that are completely out of context. I mean, context. It sounds so silly with the seven deadly X's. I mean, it sounds really, really corny. It sounded like the Dragon Ball Z movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they could have done differently, but what they did didn't work so well.
No.
And I'm really sad because this movie's going to be like every other Edgar Wright movie. As soon as it hits DVD, everyone's going to see it and everyone's going to fall in love with it. They're like, this movie was awesome.
Yeah.
It's like, if you only realize it and give it a chance while it's in the flipping theater.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you could feel the cult through this thing, like just ready to pounce. Yeah, because like with Hot Fuzz, it felt like it took a while for that one to really catch on with appreciation. Shaun of the Dead did really well in theaters, but it wasn't until DVD that people like all of a sudden you saw the shirts and stuff everywhere. But this thing is going to be... Really, I could see it being another Fight Club. I could really see it being a movie that this generation really latches on to because it's so stylistically different. But at the same time, it is such a movie of its time. I mean, it both mocks and celebrates and exploits everything about being a teenager right now. You know?
And it's retro because it's very... The gaming stuff is retro stuff.
The gaming stuff is retro. Yeah, but the fight scenes, I mean, the fight scenes are so caffeinated. I mean, they make the Matrix look pretty slow in comparison. Yeah. The fight scenes are so kinetic and frenetic. And that, I mean that as a compliment. The fight scenes are fantastic.
So let's talk about the film itself. Let's talk about the plot. Oh, look, Scott Pilgrim falls in love with a girl, and he has to fight the X's. There you go. That's really all you need going into this movie. That's all you need to know.
Sure.
And the rest of it just kind of lets itself go.
Okay.
You let the movie happen. Granted, you know, there's all the jokes about how he's dating a high school girl and... You know, they might hold hands one time. That was just... And that character just has such a great payoff.
Yeah.
Knives. Oh, yeah. Knives is great.
That performance, true, by that actress was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really felt for her when things weren't going her way.
Yes. But Scott falls in love with Ramona Flowers, played by...
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
The celebrity crusher forever.
Yes.
That's what she shall be known as forever.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a pretty difficult job, I think. With this film, because it really could have come off as really catty and really disinterested, and she played it with a bit of soul.
I really like what she did. You know, what you see in the movie, like, this isn't like anything she's ever done before. And it's not that Miss Winstead has ever had a real chance to have a role like this. I mean, she plays a character who's kind of like, imagine like kind of a beautiful Janine Garofalo crossed with the character that Kate Winslet played in Eternal Sunshine. I mean, like you're saying, like very, very prickly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, she is truly lovely, and Scott realizes that right away. Though, of course, you know, he has to kind of wear her down before he gets to experience that side of her.
Yeah, yeah. And Michael Cera, you know, I've heard people say this is not the typical Michael Cera role.
No, I gotta disagree with that. I think this is right. I think this is right in line with him, and I think in a good way. The way this is right in line with the kind of thing that John Cusack did when he found the John Cusack role.
There is, yeah. I think the one thing that is different from previous Michael Cera roles is that he has a confidence in his character in this film.
Yes and no. I think he has a confidence that
once the fights kick in a typical Michael Cera role, that would not have happened. He would have got his ass beat every single time.
But the important part is the relationship that he his love for Ramona and how insecure that makes him. And those scenes, I don't know. I thought this is definitely, he's kind of the poster boy for this generation's thinking person's nerd, you know?
Yeah. But it, there's a little bit more flexibility, is what I'm saying, than the typical thing that he usually does. So
yeah, no question. I mean, this is kind of like his character from Superbad, maybe like a few years older.
and in a video game world, yes. Yep. We need to talk about the evil X's because they were half the fun. If the X's didn't work, you didn't care about this movie.
Well, I think this is where you and I will start to disagree a little bit. Because I think I love this movie a little less than you did. I like the film, but for me, it had as many good things as it did bad, though I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I thought the Asian twins were all effect and no character.
Oh, absolutely.
I was really disappointed there because there's so much buildup and there's such an emphasis that there's seven, and I wanted each to be better and better. And you had that with Chris Evans to Brandon Ralph, but for me, Jason Schwartzman was great, but there's a huge gap. Like, I thought.
From the between Brandon Routh and Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah.
Huge.
Like the first guy, like the emo guy. Like, I mean.
the Bollywood number.
I didn't like that. I thought some of that really worked really well because the casting was so good. And some of it, I just, maybe they didn't have time to really, you know, kind of develop those characters, but I think Routh and Evans and Schwartzman were definitely the best.
Absolutely. They're the part that made the movie work for me.
Yeah.
The Hindi guy, I think, with the Bollywood number, I think that was used mostly to say, hey, you know what? You aren't in the real world in this movie. I thought that was a great illustration of that. The character was whatever.
It felt excessive to me, though. Like, it reminded me of some of those scenes in Moulin Rouge where it's like they're trying stuff and not everything's working. For me, it reminded me of like the first 20 minutes of Moulin Rouge where it's like, this works, this doesn't work. We're trying stuff. Go with it.
Gotcha. But Chris Evans was freaking hilarious.
He was really great. And I've enjoyed going on the website and reading the movie posters for his fake films. Those are right. He's quite good here. I mean, he's really playing a parody of like the awful ex-boyfriend who went to Hollywood and became a Hollywood superstar despite the fact that he has no discernible talent. Evans is good in this movie in a way that he's not usually good in other movies.
Yeah, this isn't making me say, oh yeah, that's my Captain America. That's not this movie at all.
Yeah, no, in fact, you'd think, wow, he'd probably be a good villain in a Captain America movie seeing this. Yeah, yeah.
But he played it up so much that it was very fun. The whole skateboard grinding thing was hilarious.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, if you get that reference. There's a lot of stuff in this movie. Like, you're either going to get it and like it, or you're not going to get it and going to be like, that was strange.
Yeah, I think you could arguably say that Brandon Routh was the best X.
Yeah, I would agree, too, just because he had enough screen time to develop the character. I think there were so many funny things about that character. And the way he played it was great, really great.
And then the cameo at the end of his segment. I'm not going to ruin that cameo, but I was like, is that who I think it? That totally is him.
Yeah, that was fun.
Such a walk-on bit part, but I loved seeing him in it. Mm-hmm. And Jason Schwartzman was kind of the good, evil, bad guy, the main bad guy.
He's played variations of this snarky bad guy before, but, you know, few people do it as well as he does, and he's really wonderful. I really enjoyed his scenes. There's I don't know, like, he almost reminded me of like William Zabka in the Karate Kid movies.
Okay, yeah.
Like, he's such a jerk. And you really, like, it's not just that he's mean, it's just that he loves being mean. You really want to see
if
this
guy
get
mustache,
slapped.
He'd be twirling it. There's
exactly.
No question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. I will say I loved the payoff for the mirror match, I will say, at the end of the film. If you're a Mortal Kombat fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But that payoff was hilarious, I thought.
Yeah, no, that was a great, great idea. Because at that point, the film was starting to run a little long. And so the fact that it went that direction was so smart. It's a really funny visual gag, too, the two of them walking out together. That was great.
Yeah, and what I loved about this film is the fact that it pays off jokes that it does earlier. The part where you've seen in the trailer, what are you doing? Getting a life. And the payoff for that joke was great. Just how he gets, you can't spoil that scene.
That's a good moment. And the whole logic behind the coins, that was very funny, the way they introduced that joke and the way it keeps going. And
oh, yeah. I don't even have enough for bus fare. I'll loan you the 35 cents. Okay, cool. And the final fight I thought was pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The payoff for the characters.
All of the action scenes I thought were very good. Very good. I mean, this is a very exciting, exciting movie to watch. Not only because the action scene is so exhilarating, but because you never know quite what the movie is going to try. And even the opening credits, it's like, this is not a Hollywood film. This really does feel like a guy who's, you know, kind of making his version of a Hollywood movie and commenting on a Hollywood movie.
I think this is probably where we're going to digress a little bit in opinion, but I would go as far as to say this is almost a more accessible version of something that Terry Gilliam would do. I think as far as just how unique of a vision and a look it is.
In terms of uniqueness, yeah, definitely. To me, this is the movie I wanted 500 Days of Summer to be.
Okay.
I dislike that film, despite the fact that it does a lot of the same things. It's a very CGI heavy take on a romantic comedy, and this movie, what Scott Pilgrim did, both something that the geeks love about it, but something I think people like myself really love, is that it's a statement about all the crap we have to deal with when we're with someone who has dated more than a few people before you, having to deal with that and like literally having to battle those demons, literally having to deal with, oh my God, she's dealt with 7 guys and I have to literally fight them off.
Seven exes.
Sorry.
Sorry, I had to throw the
joke
in there.
I appreciate that. Julia keeps correcting me. It's like, remember, one of them was a girl.
Yeah.
Which is funny because the girl in the female ex was Michael Cera's co-star on Arrested Development.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
They were very funny in that together. So it's funny to see her have that scene with him. But
so you weren't as over the moon on this as I was.
And not to say I didn't like it. It's one of these movies, like, to me, like, I mean, I know you liked it. I hated the Bollywood scene.
Well, I thought it worked. I'm not going to say I liked it.
it's one of these movies. It's one of these moments where, like, like if I had a meter, there were parts where the meter was off the charts, and I'm loving it. But that was a scene where I just thought, oh gosh, this is where the movie's starting to suck. I'm like, oh, it got better. I think the movie was just a little too crazy at times, and it just tried. But again, that's very much in line with Edgar Wright's space.
Oh yeah.
To me, this is like
absolutely.
In my review for Maui Time, I said this movie is like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind crossed with an episode of Space. And I went into I went into it in my review a bit, saying like the style of editing is it's radical. It's also very much a modern device, but I've never seen it done quite this way, where every scene is absolutely stripped of anything unnecessary. Every scene is right to whatever the scene is about. If it's about Scott Pilgrim going to a club with his friends, that's the scene.
Yeah.
There wasn't a scene, even though it's a very long film, there are no, like, you know, this movie, every scene
there's
is...
There's not a lot of fat in this movie.
Exactly. Every scene is trimmed to its absolute essence. And that's like, it has this really jarring thing where one moment Scott will be talking to somebody, next thing it'll be like 2 days later and he'll be with them at a club or something, which is very much like Space, where the editing is very frantic, it's very fast, and, you know, and if you laugh at the joke or not, don't worry, there'll be another hip in joke like that maybe like 2 seconds later. And, you know, for better or for worse, that's the kind of movie this is.
And there hits a point where actually there is an episode of Space where Tim and Daisy are having a fight, a verbal fight. And every time one of them, you know, scores a hit, quote unquote, they go to a shot of the Tekken video game on the PS1. One of them punching the other or kicking, and it actually does. You could say that this does reference Office of Space in some ways directly. So, I loved it. I will be buying it for sure.
Oh yeah, and I'll definitely want to see the film again. One thing I want to throw out, and I definitely want to toss this around with you. I think the film is better at being an exercise in style than it is being a love story. I think it's better being an action movie than it is being a love story. And because, you know, and I've talked to you about this, even though I liked what Sarah and Winstead did, I think in terms of passion and in terms of really feeling their relationship, I've said, you know, and I know you didn't like this at all, but I think, you know, to me, they're just a few notches above the characters in Twilight. This is a really internalized romance, you know. These are very awkward, very private, you know, very much Gen Z teens who are, like, unable to, you know, fully express what they're going through, and they're very awkward. So I think it kind of makes the love story a little muted.
I could see it kind of, I won't say it's the best romantic storyline of all time. Like, people are like, this is like a great romance. I won't say it's a great romance. I bought into the romance, and that's really all I needed to do. So I'm not going to, yeah, it was okay. You know, it gave me enough to buy into the rest of the story, which was crucial. Because if you don't buy into there's some kind of retraction and some kind of chemistry there between them, then you're not going to care that he has to fight seven exes. You wouldn't care that he actually cares about this girl enough. You wouldn't buy into the fact that he cares about this girl enough to actually literally fight for her. And I did. It's not amazing as far as romance goes, but it's still a heck of a fun movie.
Okay.
So yeah, I bought into it enough.
All right.
I think that's fair to say. So yeah.
Would this movie have done better, like, if it released this weekend or next weekend when its only competition is like...
Well, yeah, when it's sad and sparse. This movie would do so much better if it released next weekend, for sure.
Yeah, because, you know, it's fun. I think if they really underestimated how popular The Expendables was going to be. And
yeah.
But it is kind of the same audience. I mean, it is kind of a geek audience, a very, you know, an audience, like you're saying, that, like, is nostalgic for this kind of movie or nostalgic for video games or comic books of long ago.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm honestly concerned for Wright being able to do what he does, you know, have that artistic freedom in the future. Because this movie cost $60 million and it's made $15 million. So, I mean, and it's going to absolutely make its money back on home video because everyone's going to fall in love with it, just like they did with Shaun of the Dead, just like they did with Hot Fuzz. This is different in that it's not an Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, I mean, a Simon Pegg, Nick Frost collaboration as well.
I can see what happened to him happening to David Fincher, whereas after Fight Club was a huge money loser, you know, he came back with Panic Room, you know, a very studio. I can see Edgar Wright doing something like that, where he finds a project that's very much a studio film and very much of, you know, kind of a established either franchise or kind of a safe Hollywood movie, but he gets to put his stamp on it and maybe reestablish himself that way in Hollywood's eyes, not ours.
Yeah, yeah. So. Fair enough. So yes, I liked it. I loved it. You liked it at least.
I liked it a lot. Yeah, I think there's greatness. And in fact, I think its best scenes are really brilliant and really radical. And I love that there's nothing else like it out there. I would say that for me, it's like parts of it. Like I've gone with the comparing it to Moulin Rouge and also to Southland Tales. I think parts of it approach being really, really bad, but I think the movie might manage to bounce back from it. A lot of stereotypes. you know, I think I would have liked a little less stereotypes, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
But I mean, I understand, you know, it's based on a graphic novel and I understand the characters are, you know, kind of one note in that way. But again, you know, it goes back to how I feel about the love story. I think the characters were just, it's a little too one note. And I think the movie is best as an action movie and as a kind of a comedy about right now than it is about people.
Fair enough. All right. That's a good enough point to stop on. Cool.
But no, definitely worth seeing. It's definitely going to be one of the cult films in the next 10 years.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's our discussion on Scott Pilgrim for the week. We're going to
see this movie while you can.
See it in the theater because it's well worth seeing on the big screen. Absolutely.
And definitely wait till the very end of the credits. It wasn't much, but I thought it was a little... You didn't see?
I don't think I did.
Oh, it's a nice little... They got a little animated likeness of Scott beating the crap out of the end title. It lasts about a minute. Yeah. Okay. But no, definitely see it in the theater. This is a movie meant to be seen on the biggest screen. I mean, really, its best parts are truly, truly dazzling.
I'd say that they border on genius, just how great some of those sequences are.
Yes. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this week.
Ugh,
it's gosh. You know, talk about a time when this is the time to buy for Scott Pilgrim to release. This
a year ago, we had the Inglourious Basterds. A year later, what do we have, Dave?
We have the Avatar Special Edition, which all anyone is talking about is that it has a sex scene added in. Which, who cares? Big fat, who cares?
How is this going to do? I mean, do you think there's really enough Ava fanatics out there who really want to see this? The Avatards, as they're called. Do you think they're still going to? I didn't make that up. That's don't quote me on that. I didn't make that up. Someone else said that before me.
I did not say that, but I fully endorse that name. All right. I don't see it doing very well.
I can't see it.
It's not going to go IMAX 3D, is it?
Is it? I mean,
I don't,
Inception has most of the screens right now. I mean, Inception going to finally, like, is Inception going to get tossed aside for this?
I hope not, because one's a really good movie and one's okay.
Is there enough hype for this thing? Like, honestly, I keep forgetting that it was even coming out.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to do that well because there hasn't been much hype behind it. And, oh, look, you can buy it on freaking DVD and Blu-ray. Or if you want to, for your $12, $15, you could wait and just put that money towards buying the extended cut in November when it comes out because they've already announced it's coming.
Man, they're doing some triple dipping on this thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're dipping
a year after it was in theaters.
Yeah.
A bit jip off.
It's okay. We can go see The Last Exorcism instead.
No.
Okay, what about Takers?
Takers.
No.
See, remember that movie from April?
The biggest names are Matt Dillon and Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen, yeah. Idris Elba, I think, is also in that. I only know because I've seen the poster outside of theater like for forever.
Oh, it looks... I saw the trailer and... You know, there are movies when, you know, when we go to screenings, it's a 2-hour round trip.
Yeah.
So we don't pay money to go to the movie, but it's a significant investment in time and gas and whatever. And when I saw this one, I was like, I might go see this depending on where it's playing. It's playing at 16th Street Mall? No thanks.
No way.
I'm good. So yeah, I have no desire to see this. It looks, man, you know, there's really no way to say anything nice about this movie. I'm just going to. Ocean's 11 that's way too full of itself.
There you go. Yeah, it's not that it looks like, you know, it doesn't look like a lottery ticket. I think it looks better than Lottery Ticket or Marmaduke, but it looks so generic.
It makes Ocean's 12 look appealing.
We've seen this kind of movie before. Like, there was one with Lawrence Fishburne that came out last year. What was it? Armored.
Remember?
It looks like this year's Armored. It's a cast of, like, actors who probably do better if they're paired with much bigger actors. In a movie,
and better actors. Oh, sorry.
Well, no. Matt Dillon's good. I think Matt Dillon's a good actor. But yeah, like most of these guys, like they usually don't open movies by themselves. But in an ensemble heist movie, just it looks like the kind of thing, that you would watch on TV or watch on an airplane. Not the kind of movie you should go out of your way to pay. Like,
it looks like the movie, kind of movie I fall asleep to on an airplane.
Mm, yeah.
I know.
Well, you know, the last movie I fell asleep to on an airplane, was The Secret Life of Bees. I did about 5 minutes. I have no idea what happens in that movie.
Fair enough. So. Yeah, I have no desire. Yeah. Go see Scott Pilgrim.
Go see Scott Pilgrim. Go see Expendables. Go see Inception again. And if you're old enough, go see Piranha 3D. Those are the best of the summer that are out right now. Go see them.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But see Scott Pilgrim first because it needs your help.
Yeah. And next week's DVD is not looking all that. Well, there's a decent title or two. No, there's not really even.
What do we got?
If you're all about the vampire goodness on TV and don't want, you know, the boobies that True Blood gives you, I guess you could get The Vampire Diaries Season 1.
Mm.
No?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Wait. Here, I got your winner right here. Oh. I believe this is Owen Wilson in the glorious masterpiece that is Marmaduke.
Isn't it still playing?
I don't know.
Marmaduke.
Yeah.
Man, like, that was like last month you guys did that episode, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Jeez.
It wasn't that long ago.
No, seriously.
Maybe a couple months ago. It was pretty recent, though.
Two at the most.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, that's like from Justin the Kelly turnover. And it did $40 million. That's not bad. I mean, it was a flop, but still, $40 million, that's nothing to be embarrassed about. I can't believe it's that quickly to DVD.
Yeah, well, oh, wait, here you go. Oh, wait, no, it's the 17 millionth dip on Evil Dead, but this time you can get it on Blu-ray.
Is it going to look good on Blu-ray?
I don't know.
Because some of these movies, I swear, they look good, faded, and scratchy, and old, like Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to see crystal clear, man. Am I going to be able to see the fakiness of some of the effects? I mean,
maybe. I don't know. And believe it or not, I actually found a crap title. Those aren't the crap titles of the week. There's our shocker. Oh, wow. I can't believe I'm going to say this.
What do you got?
Once again, you know, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. But Strawberry Shortcake, the Glimmer Berry Ball movie.
The Glimmer Berry Ball movie. Try saying that fast five times, listeners.
When you find a kid's version of a movie that sounds as pretentious as Bad Lieutenant Port of Call New Orleans, like that's how long that title is.
The Glimmer Berry Ball. Huh.
Yeah, you said so. I don't remember what you said.
I said it sounds like a party Richard Simmons would have at his house.
Oh, there it is. All right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Next couple weeks kind of rough.
I like Richard Simmons.
Next couple weeks are kind of rough. This week and next week, kind of rough when it comes to DVD, Blu-ray type stuff.
Well, you know why? We're back in January. We're back in the January season. This is where the studio
or June if it's Marmaduke.
Well, we're back to that. You know, we're back to like this is the dumping ground. You know, and thankfully, like I was telling you earlier, we've got Machete and we've got Wall Street 2 coming up. So hopefully, good things from those movies. But otherwise, you know, you got to wait till The Social Network, till things really start to pick up again.
Yeah, we'll just have to see what happens. I just don't know. I don't know. Anyhow, this week we have a voicemail.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and play this. And this time I actually have to say that this is from the Mr. Billy Flynn because he did not introduce himself for once. So
all right.
It's all good. Let's go ahead and roll it.
Hello, everyone. I just wanted you to know I'm so happy that you actually finished the Alfred Hitchcock topic. And here's why. Alfred Hitchcock is the reason I love film. Star Wars is the reason I love movies, but Alfred Hitchcock is the reason I love film. Let's go back to my love affair with the works of Alfred Hitchcock, which, oddly enough, did start with Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Because when I was growing up, you know, you just had reruns of TV shows and, you know, channels went off the air and Matlock and all that. But Alfred Hitchcock Presents was awesome. Fantastic show, you know, that even Quentin Tarantino had to reference in Four Rooms. Just the stories there was fantastic, and yes, his sense of humor was amazing. And I was watching this as a little kid. And then, you know, going to the library, oh my God, here's books. Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators? Okay, looking back on them now, they're not that good. But Alfred Hitchcock was in it. That was awesome. But really, it all happened when my family, when we finally got cable, because yes, kids, once upon a time, it wasn't standard. When we got cable, the movie channel, like 2 months after we had cable, did an Alfred Hitchcock month. And they showed The Trouble with Harry, The Man Who Knew Too Much, the remake, North by Northwest, Rear Window, and something else that I just cannot think of off the top of my head. I feel silly. But yes, amazing. Vertigo was the other one. Watched all of these, fell in love with them. Rear Window, first Hitchcock film I saw. Blew my little mind. It was so, so, so good. The things that the man does, and to this day, people are still copying Disturbing Anyone. Well, not just overall plot concepts, but, you know, the camera angles, the shots, setting things up. It's just, oh, my God, so good. And, yeah, you're right. I would like to have seen what a Hitchcock of the 80s would have done, because I bet it would have been rather, rather insane. Also, American Psycho, that ending. God, you can look at it so many ways. Whatever it is, I've often gone back and forth between Patrick Bateman killed no one, or Patrick Bateman might have killed like one person, and then the rest of it was like somebody else, and you know, he was just acting, trying to, you know, that whole interconnected thing. But either way, at the very end of it, it's an incredibly sad ending, because no matter what you feel about Patrick Bateman personally, the world that he has put himself into is literally one where people are easily replaceable, where they're all pretty much the same person anyway. And that's why even if he was the killer, which I still don't think he is, but if he was the killer, why no one would ever let, you know, him get away, you know, why everyone's covering up and just not acknowledging what's happening, because it would mess up the mindset and the world that they as a collective group have created. And fantastic film and incredibly funny. And went to see the Riff Tracks Reefer Madness edition, hysterical. The short, the very first short they showed is interesting because I never knew in my lifetime that people in the 30s were having a problem and they had to make a PSA to warn you that it's really dangerous to wash your clothes with gasoline. Who knew? And I bring that up because, Barry, October 28th is the next Riffrax live event, and they'll be doing Vincent Price's House on Haunted Hill. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure you love that film. It's a damn fine time, and I can't wait to see that. So, until you do your next one, which I'm hearing is Scott Pilgrim, and I should hear nothing but about how wonderful and amazing and interesting and inventive and how like nothing else you've ever seen before is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So you probably just talked about it. So if you said anything, I swear to God, Barry, if you said overrated, I'm going to have Ethan make fun of you. Just that simple. So until we talk again, gentlemen, I will see you later. Bye.
I actually used to read the Alfred Hitchcock Three Investigators books.
I used to read the Alfred Hitchcock magazine where they like publish short stories and whatnot. And yeah. Twilight Zone magazine for that matter too.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a big Three Investigators fan as a kid.
Oh cool.
Like that was the best. I'm like Alfred Hitchcock, even better yet. And yet they weren't that great, but they're fun.
That was a great message. Thank you, Ethan.
Ethan. Wow.
Billy. That was Billy. I'm sorry.
Mr. Flynn, yes.
You know why? I'm missing Ethan right now. I am. I'm sorry. No, I'm not confusing the two. They couldn't be more different. No, I wanted to mention something that Billy brought up that made me a little nostalgic for a second there. I remember when our family first got HBO back in, let's see, the early 80s, there was this wonderful thing where they would show a movie, and it was hosted by two people who were never to be seen again. And they would be like, this is what you can get on HBO. And now for another great movie, like it was nothing but classic films. And my father actually videotaped this. So I remember watching it. I remember popping it in one day and watching it. Like they showed Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the special edition. And then it's like, and now for another great example, what HBO has to offer. And they showed like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Like it was nothing but great American movies. Yeah, it's like.
Before it was Skinamax Lite.
Well, before, you know, it's like now Kangaroo Jack, you know. Now it's like they'll show anything, you know, and.
Yeah, there's but, that too. Sure.
No, I really appreciate that message. I also wanted to comment on, it's funny you mentioned Reefer Madness. I'm actually showing that in my class on Thursday.
Really?
I start my Cult Underground Cinema class. I start with Freaks on Tuesday and then Reefer Madness on Thursday. But no, I appreciate you mentioned that because I would love to see that. I do love the original House on Haunted Hill. You know, it's William Castle.
Oh, yeah. Steph said she'd go to it. So the only kicker is it's like on a Thursday night again.
Is it? I don't know if I could do that.
Well, you did it for Plan 9.
I did. I broke some serious speed laws, and I went to the wrong theater.
But
that's
okay.
But this theater would be actually... I was there!
The right theater would be closer, so it'd be easier for you to get to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's the Cinemark, so...
Okay. Yeah, well, I'll think about that. I would like to go. I would love to go, so
Steph's
going to
go. She's like, oh, I'm there, for sure.
Sweet. I think this Tuesday is Reefer Madness.
They're doing an encore presentation.
Yeah, which again, you know, it's when I'm teaching my class, so...
Yeah.
But I appreciate bringing that up. Reefer Madness, like, it's... I don't know. It's one of these things, like even like the movie, like I mentioned the other day, I watched the movie Jeffrey, and it was clearly written at a time when people really weren't aware completely how the AIDS virus worked. And it's funny to watch something more extreme like Reefer Madness, where it's like, you know, one puff of marijuana and you are a sociopathic serial killing
monster.
Who's
gonna jump out of a window.
Right. So, good stuff.
Yes. And just to throw it out there for anyone who's on Facebook, and I invited Cool, if not, you're still welcome to come if you're in the Colorado area. This Friday night, I'm making it a double feature. I'm going to go catch Best Worst Movie because it's showing at the Tivoli. And then Keith Garcia, the brilliant programmer he is, making the Watching Hour film that night at 10 o'clock, Troll 2. So that's just going to be a great double feature.
Amazing double feature. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I've invited some cool people to go. And hey, you're cool if you go too. I'll just put it that way.
Go, cool people. Go.
Yes, indeed. But if you want to shoot us an email, you absolutely can to podcast Barry, Dave, or Ethan, all at screengeeks.com. You can also give us a call at 719-358-2675. Yes, that's 719-358. Oh, where is it? Dadgummit, I didn't have it ready. Oh, what happened? There it is.
Mork.
Yeah. You can say bork. If you dial at the bork three times, it'll still get through because it just ignores it. But yes, good times ahead. We're going to have a fun episode next week. We're not going to reveal it yet. And then
No,
let's not reveal it.
Oh, come on. Don't you want to get them hooked? Don't you want to come back?
See, if we don't tell them, then they might be interested.
Well, take our word for it, listeners. It's going to be really good. It's not one of those like 7-part shows where like we don't finish it till November. No, we're actually doing a standalone by request episode this coming Sunday. So please listen to the next episode.
And then we've got a fun episode after that too.
We do.
Yes. Yeah,
we
do. Yes. So We'll just leave it at that.
They're all going to be amazing. This was the weak one. The one after these are going to be so
I think
good.
This was a pretty decent one. I don't know.
I think it did pretty good.
Yeah, all right. Anyhow, until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Take care.